Hey, Hicken here. Thanks for checking out the 1010XL On Demand. It's brought to you by Kuhn Flowers. Locations on Beach Boulevard and in Ponte Vedra. Kuhn Flowers wants to be your florist.
Flacco tries to step up. He is hit, and he's going to be sacked. Dante Fowler got him inside the 40-yard line. Flacco drops the throw against a four-man rush. Now he moves around. He's going to get sacked again. The Jaguars got him again inside the 20-yard line that time. Another three and out. Calais Campbell was in the middle of it. Goes toward the end zone. He's got Mark. Mercedes Lewis into the end zone for the touchdown. A wheel route to Mercedes Lewis for the touchdown, and the Jags have scored again. Straight drop by Bortles. Looking. Fires toward the end zone. What's Mercedes Lewis? Mercedes has it. Into the end zone. Touchdown. They throw a fade to the right side to Mercedes Lewis. Mercedes makes the catch in the corner of the end zone. Touchdown. Flacco under center. Dropping the throw is the veteran. Looks to the left side. Throws left side. Lineup ball is knocked incomplete and now picked off. A.J. Boye, what an interception that was. He knocked it up into the air and then made the diving interception. That's a takeaway for the Jaguars.
Once he got one, he kept coming up to me. He said, Jay, yours is coming.
Flacco fires downfield. Diving attempt and picked off. A diving interception by Jalen Ramsey.
He's got the best secondary in the league, easily. We went out there, we showed it. I'm going to go out and say we got the best defense in the league.
Live from TIAA Bank Field, 1010XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey, Tony Smith, and John Osher.
All right, here we are, another fresh week of Jaguars Today, ready to break the wheel as far as sports talk radio goes. Some of you understand what that reference means. Others, I hope it won't end as disappointingly as others. The actual wheel being broken. No spoilers on Game of Thrones. Welcome back, Tony, your assignment on Friday. Hello, John Osher. How are you?
You got Game of Thrones, and I hear in the break that you're drafting fantasy football.
Oh, I finally started.
Big weekend for
this
you.
By this time last year, I probably had 50 teams drafted. Seriously, I had 50. Yeah. And
is this your first, the one?
No, well, my first started on Thursday, and I've now got 8 of them working at the same time. So
you're in heaven.
Well, once
I
start.
A little break for GOT on Sunday. I call it GOT.
You don't have to take a break. You just got the iPad. It tells you when you're on the clock. You go check out, you know, what's up. And I told Tony, you know, I get in one or two of these leagues, and then, like, it does get the juices flowing. And then I look down, and I'm like, your next pick is in 9 selections. And the season doesn't start for months and months and months. Everyone has an 8-hour clock, so you don't time out. So you're sitting there. You don't know if you're going to even pick today. So I'm like, I'll just add another league, right? And maybe I'll get an early pick in that one again, you know, because it is a little bit of an addiction for me.
So it's not quite the same tempo as, like, the real NFL draft, where it's every 15
minutes. Not quite, no. Although you can. There are ones that they offer. These are best ball league. You draft the 20-man roster, and then you don't mess with it for the rest of the season.
So you don't know the people that are in the league that you're doing.
Occasionally I know a few, but it's randomly kind of done. But you can choose to be in ones that have one-minute timers. If you just want to sit there and knock out a team, you know, that's fine.
So it's not like you and the guys from the bar. This is more of a...
It could be. Yeah. I mean, you can select, you can make a private league and invite whoever you like, I just am joining whatever's out there.
Gotcha.
You know, so there's that, and everyone's caught up now on where I stand on my drafting.
It's not my thing, but you are the standard in terms of fantasy football.
Well, in terms of volume of teams, I was up there last year. You know, I had like 165 teams in every when you combine all the different formats together. But yes, we will not spoil Game of Thrones, although I will say that anyone who replied to our bonus question on Friday, you were all wrong. Let's just put it that way. You were all wrong. And if you think about it, you'll understand why you were all wrong. And again, I'm sure people have DVR'd it who haven't watched it last night, so we're not going to spoil it less than 24 hours after it aired. Last night.
You don't spoil it for me.
No. Prosser is funny because, you know, people are, when they've never watched a show and then they binge watch it, no matter when it is.
Right.
And Hacker's done this in the past. Like, have you seen this movie? And it's a movie that came out 12 years ago. Right. And I've just seen it. And he'll be like, this thing. And he starts, you know.
The classic was he came in one day when we were working over at 90-90. He's like, you guys ever heard of this Muppets thing? It was like, yeah.
Yeah, like in the early 70s.
We've all heard of the Muppets for the time we were very little.
I wasn't aware of these guys.
It's Muppets.
Pretty funny.
It's pretty good.
So, there's that floating around out there right now. Jags on the field tomorrow for OTAs. Some of them will be anyway. Most of them will be out there for OTAs. We will get to observe and not report is what we'll get to do for the most part.
Mm-hmm. Pretty much, yeah.
Right? I mean, that's it. Yeah. Unless Doug Marrone brings it up at the on a live press conference type situation, there is no real talking about what you see on the field.
Which, a credit to Doug, if you see something, he'll usually talk about it. If it's not like if it's a trick play,
nobody's giving away, and that's the thing. Nobody wants to sit here and go
on this in terms of giving you something to work with. You help the fan have some idea of what's going on. Not giving away everything, but they're better than some teams I've been around.
Right. If they're secretly going to run Marquise Lee on a jet sweep 7 times a game, or something like that. I don't think, maybe I'm wrong. I don't care about giving away. I don't want to give away the game plan kind of thing.
No, everybody gets that's not what you're doing out there.
Right. So you just, I think most of us want to see how Nick Foles looks throwing the football. Right. I mean, there's no contact, at least very minimal contact. There's always some contact in these type situations, but it's not like you're not in pads, you're not doing, goal line drills, things like that. This is more, to me, a glorified kind of 7-on-7. It's about how the quarterback timing looks with the pass catchers.
You get a lot of stories with people talking about how guys looking sharp and quick.
Yes, right. Sharp running sharp
big,
routes.
Big buzzwords for me in the next few
because
weeks.
What else is there to really talk about, right? And honestly,
Look good out of the break.
I just want to see Nick Foles look consistently accurate. Yep. This is a situation where every NFL quarterback should look consistently accurate, should be completing a ridiculously high amount of their attempt. Like, I don't think 90% is asking too much because there's no real pass rush. There's no, the defenders can't bump the receivers. Right. In a lot of cases, you're throwing truly against air. You're just running pass patterns without any defenders on you whatsoever.
Right. Depending on what they're working on.
Sure.
Sometimes the reason, and I get it, that they don't really want OTAs hardcore reported in terms of, Foles went 18 to 25, is there are times they're putting something in the morning and then going out 45 minutes later and working on it, and they've never done it before. So it can look sloppy because it's the first time they've done something. That's really the reason that they don't want it used as a gauge of where they are.
A measuring stick.
But for the most part, when they're doing something that they're familiar with, if it's a 15, 20-yard route, you would hope it's getting completed.
However, Tony, it is better for us, at least I enjoy it more, to be outside in a tent because it's going to be sunny all week long and rather than being cooped up inside the studio.
So you'll be in your tent?
We'll be in our tent outside, good. So you can come by and visit us out there. You can wave to us as you walk by
in my hat.
In your big floppy hat, you're smart. I've got long sleeves on and we're indoors today. You can bet I will be wearing the long sleeve shirts out there because I'm just, man, my arms are so pale. They really are. And like, I've got the black long sleeve shirt on, but I've got the clear delineation with the back of my hand from the golf and the sunshine.
Right.
And it's just the way it is. No skin cancer on these arms.
That's right.
It's
13. Yeah, we have 13 practices of some sort until the end of minicamp. And whether we like it or not, we're going.
We're going to be out there. And that's the thing. I heard Baselli on with the drill this morning. I don't think you have to be out there for every single one of these. I do think it's good to be out there to get a little bit of a feel for how things look and what the energy level is and different things like that. And I want to see Leonard Fournette just, even though Leonard Fournette's a type of running back that when he is on his game, he is better in a full contact situation because he is a physical guy who can really put it to the defense at times with his physicality and his speed combination. But I still want to see, does he look quick? And does it matter?
Yeah, last year he looked quick.
He did, but he
checked all the boxes. But
you want him to check him again, right? And say, all right, is he back to that spot now? Can he maintain that?
You don't want to see him not looking quick.
That's the thing, right? and that's one thing Baselli said. You're not going to find out who can play in OTAs, you're going to find out who can't play in OTAs.
That's especially true of the young guys. you know, the older guys,
like guys coming in,
you sort of know what they are, and there may be a certain element of, okay, I've seen this, especially on defense. Some of these guys, how much are they really getting out of it in terms of, okay, I know what we're doing. There'll be some wrinkles with Dom Capers coming in, but they know the scheme. Offensively, these sessions are always very important for quarterbacks, receivers, regardless, and especially if it's a new situation with quarterbacks working with receivers they haven't worked with before and players trying to learn schemes. It's a learning process more than it is an evaluation process, which is, again, why they don't really want people trying to draw judgments from what they're seeing.
As Doug Marone said, it's better to have your quarterback ahead of your the rest of your offense, and having played with John DeFilippo, you would think that that would be the case with Nick Foles. So we'll get a peek at it and then not be able to describe it in very much detail.
Well, but DeFilippo speaks on Thursday, and if I'm not mistaken, that'll be the first time he's really spoken to the gathered media fielding a ton of questions. He's done some stuff here and there, I think, with our website, but beyond that. So when the coordinators speak, especially a new coordinator, that's a newsworthy day.
Well, the executive vice president spoke this morning to Dan and Jeff out at the J Fund Celebrity Golf Tournament, so we'll hear that conversation, a lot of it about the football, and some certainly about the charity that we're all to one degree or another invested in helping out, I think. And just if you want to hear from Tom Coughlin, you don't get many opportunities throughout the course of the year. So anytime,
three or four, sure.
Yeah. So anytime he speaks, we're going to bring that to you here on Jaguars Today. So you can expect that a little over an hour from now. The question of the day is out there once again. If you'd like to participate, it's out there on all our social media platforms. We'll get you all set up with that when we return in a moment, but already getting a pretty good response to it, but we're up against it. So let's take a time out here. We'll come back. We'll recap last Friday's question today. I'll get your thoughts, Tony and John, on the poll question that we put out there. See if you agree with the masses on that. Also, Peter King, in his Football Morning in America column, polled 25 different people in the NFL, some players, some front office types, some coaches, on what is the one thing you would do to make the National Football League's game better, and got a wide variety of responses. So we'll run through some of those and see how likely or unlikely we think some of those would be. E.T.'s back with us as well. His cousin Cliff Averill officially had his retirement this weekend, so we'll catch up with E.T. Throughout the program as well. Mike Dempsey, Tony Smith, John Osher here with you. We're live at TIAA Bank Field, Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Now more Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, Johnny O here with you on Jaguars Today, 1010XL 92.5 FM. Hope you enjoyed PGA Championship coverage this weekend. Got a little hairy there for Koepka.
Yeah, it did.
Yesterday, four straight bogeys. I was still rooting for him to win. I just want, you know, but I don't want him to be like Rory McIlroy, get those four under his belt, and then you don't hear from him again in the majors.
Oh, sure.
For a while, you know, go out and win the U.S. Open for the third consecutive time. That'd be awesome.
I mean, if Dustin had made that putt drop on 16, who knows?
And you know, well, you know, if Koepka had made a putt drop at the Masters, who knows what that would have done with Tiger? You know, so it's funny how that works out when you're going along. You don't know what moment is going to be the one that comes back to
4 out of 8 is pretty
biggest.
Nuts.
It's ridiculous, you know. But Dustin Johnson has a high comfort level at Pebble Beach right now. That's going to be the slugfest everybody wants to see. All right,
is Jordan Spieth still playing golf?
He played well. Okay. He finished tied for third or fourth. He was in like the top five, but
because remember like. Literally 3 years ago, he was going to win.
He was the guy.
85 majors.
Right, because he came and he was younger, like than Tiger at the time, and it was like, wow, he has all. He was like 20 years of major championship contention.
And what did he stop at? Three.
He's got three. You know? Hopefully, he won't stop there. But
well, but I meant in that run.
When you watch him play, when you watch Koepka and Dustin Johnson are hitting it, you know, they're like, here's where all the trouble is. They're like, all right, how far to go over all the trouble?
Yep.
And they can carry it 310.
Right.
Spieth can't do that.
And that's the.
And so he's out there. He looks like a little kid standing next to Brooks Koepka, you know, hitting it out there. And then you see Tiger on Friday going to like irons to hit the fairway, and he's missing the fairway. Like, oh, gosh. Got no shot.
That's a rough one.
It was a two-man game. All right. Our question of the day brought to you every day by Gravely Zero Turn Mowers, an American workhorse since 1916. First, let me throw out today's, then I'll recap Friday, see what you guys thought about that. Today we're asking you which three players, any position now, running back, tight end, wide receiver, do you think will catch the most passes for the Jacksonville Jaguars in 2019? So, obviously, yeah, your leading receiver is going to be on that list, but you could certainly see a back being amongst those. And if you think a single tight end is going to be prolific enough, and then kind of determining which receivers, what the pecking order is in terms of receivers. So we've gotten a wide variety of answers on that already. You can hit us up on Twitter at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, and at John Osier, and of course on the Jaguars Today Facebook page, or the phone lines or the text line driven by Duval Ford at 641-1010. Friday, put a poll out there, and we gave you three options. You can always vote other if you want to. But other than Nick Foles, the question went, which offseason addition will be the most critical to the Jaguars' success in 2019? Alphabetically, Josh Allen, John DeFilippo, Juwan Taylor, or did you want to go off the board? Some people thought Quincy Williams. I certainly understand why you could think that. A few for Josh Oliver. Obviously, Nick Foles, I think, would have run away with the poll had we left it at that. So out of the options, non-Nick Foles, how would you have voted on that, John?
Probably Juwan Taylor, because of the you would expect him to start, which I'd, you know, Allen could be a role player at first. And I think they can be good without him contributing huge as a rookie. I don't know that they can be good without Taylor being what they expect. With a nod to Chris Conley, I think that's an interesting pickup. Again, I wouldn't put him at the top of the list.
Maybe you'd like to vote for him in today's question.
Maybe I would. but I would say Taylor. Not a very sexy pick because its offensive line is not going to be stats. But that position, I'm not as worried about the defensive front playing well as I am the offensive line playing well.
Reasonable analysis of that. And certainly, I mean, that he's one of the prime candidates.
Which is why you put him on the list.
That's why he's
on
the list.
Good poll.
It's interesting when we had Jeff Lagerman in, I guess it was last Tuesday, was it, Tony? You know, we were talking about Marquise Lee and his role, and he said he thinks it's going to be Connolly and Westbrook, or I don't know if he was ranking them in that order. It was that pair he thought would be the most prolific wide receiver duo, or the likely starting wide receiver duo.
Yeah, that makes sense with, again, you wonder where Chark's going to be in terms of, you know, you darn sure would like to see him starting.
Absolutely.
Perhaps Jeff doesn't have the confidence that he's going to be quite ready for that role yet. You would hope by the end of the season he's starting that.
Well, I mean, it's a shame for DJ to miss the games down the stretch last year, when he would have gotten, I think, an increased opportunity to see footballs come his way, and missed out on that last month of potential growth. That you can make a big step forward, but I think it's a clean slate for him coming in.
Right.
I mean, the measurables are still there, the 4.34 speed and the size. And
at that spot, I think that's a spot we'll have – I don't know if we'll have a better idea of how he'll play next year at the end of OTAs, but I think we'll have a better idea of how they feel about him and what his role will be at the beginning of the season. In terms of our poll question, I'd be a little surprised if Fournette's not one of those top three.
Then you have to project that you think he's going to play X amount of games too, and I think that's a big question for a lot of people, is how available will he be? And I don't think it's an unfair question. Anybody can get hurt, understanding that, but you would hope that if he does, let's say he plays 14 games, you'd hope he's catching 3 to 4 passes in any given
game,
week.
The way they like to run things and get the ball to the back, I would and he's so much better at that than people thought he was going to be. And he's actually been, at times, more effective in that role than he has, you know, just trying to run through the tackles.
Right. There's some guys that have you're holding your breath that they're even going to catch the ball. He's never going to be like a Kareem Hunt or a Le'Veon Bell, where you could line him up in the slot and break guys down, I don't think.
No, but you don't hold your breath. I mean,
he's not at either end of the spectrum. He's a very competent pass catcher.
Well, the book on him before the draft was they were going to be bouncing off of his hands.
Right.
Which is completely untrue. Yeah. But that was the book on Jalen, too. So
Tony, how would you answer the poll question? Other than Nick Foles, the biggest offseason addition critical to the Jags' success, Allen, DeFilippo, Taylor, or somebody else?
Just because it feels like voting for Flip is almost like voting for Foles, right? I mean, he's the offensive coordinator, and he's the one that's supposed to come in and shake it up. And we're asking the question today, you know, asking who do you expect to be the top three catch guys for this football team? If you go look at the team last year, I'm looking at the list right now. They had 9 guys that caught 10 or more passes over the course of the season. 4 of them are gone. 4 of them are gone, and one of them hit Marquise Lee, obviously, because he didn't play. I mean, the turnover on that side of the ball is huge for this football team, and that includes, you know, a guy like Keelan Cole, who was number 4 on that list. I don't even know what his role is, you know, coming into the 2019 season for
this
offense.
He's got to make this football team.
Right. It's like the turnover on that side is massive. For this football team, yeah, T.J. Yeldon and Dante Moncrief were 2 and 3 on the team last year.
So there's a lot of opportunity, a lot of targets available.
You had Didi at 1, T.J. and Dante at 3, at 2 and 3, Keelan Cole 4, James O'Shaughnessy 5, Leonard Fournette 6. That's what they had last year. So, look, a lot of opportunities. D.J. Chark, obviously, because of the injuries, would have been among those guys in the top 5 you would expect, but wasn't because he got hurt. Marquise Lee's coming back into this thing. They bring in a guy like Chris Conley. It is so wide open from the perspective of there is a lot of space for someone to step in with this passing offense because a lot of people have left and a lot of people are returning.
DeFilippo won the poll. 48% of people voted that way. 27% went with Josh Allen, 22 with Taylor, and only 3 going off the board. So, look, we'll find out. But I tend to agree with Tony and the majority in that he's got an impact on everything that happens on that side of the football. And the most important thing they did was changing the quarterback situation, and we hope greatly improving the quarterback situation. And I think the fact that Nick Foles has some degree of comfort level with him coming in lets him hit the ground running a lot more so than he would have just with a fresh offensive mind working with him.
Yeah, I think that's why when he speaks on Thursday, it'll be a far more interesting part of the week than anything that happens on the field in terms of people consuming and trying to figure out what's going on with the Jags. It'll be interesting to see what he says about certain things they're going to do offensively and how much of what he's done in the past automatically is going to be what they do here.
Let's assume Marquise Lee is healthy, right? That by training camp, by the start of the season, he has no restrictions on, at least physically, on the knee. To me, looking at this, I mean, there's no way DJ Chark's not going to be up on game day, right? Because even he gives you good special teams value, even if he's not making a big dent.
He's certainly up.
Right?
Right.
Right. So he's up. Didi's up. When we say up, active, right? Right. Not an inactive guy on game day. You got to presume Marquise Lee is active. And I would think Chris Connolly has a pretty good opportunity because he's a vet who's been in the league for 4 or 5 years. He's worked with Foles to a minimal degree.
Right.
They did target him to bring him in. Right now,
we'll know much more about that the next few weeks just from the eye test.
Certainly.
But yes, I would think
he's got all the measurables though, right? Like you talk about, like Keelan Cole's a fast guy, so is Connolly.
And they want him here for a reason.
Right.
And they didn't, yeah.
The point being that Keelan Cole, I think, is going to have a tough time. Yeah, he's going to have to really stand out throughout this offseason and during practice weeks to have an opportunity to be up on game day, as at least the way things stand right now. Of course, this time last year, we'd have been saying, well, Keelan Cole's maybe in line to be the top receiver on the team. So understanding things change.
We were talking about, can he turn himself into a one? Can he be Antonio Brown-type body, come in, be that – not Antonio Brown, but can he be that kind of guy, come out of nowhere?
Right, and the team – kind of gave you that sense that they expected big things out of him. Whether they expected him to be that high, you know, just that he was going to take that major leap, didn't take the major leap. And really, start of the season, remember that catch against
New England? Looked like he was taking
like, whoa. Yeah.
And then he followed it up with a touchdown the same drive. I mean, you thought this kid is taking – remember, he was a 700-yard receiver as a rookie.
Right.
Which is, as a rookie free agent, you take
undrafted,
that
yeah,
right,
no question.
So you thought, okay, this guy is going to be a 900-yard guy, good supplement to what they want to do, made perfect sense. And then all of a sudden, it's rare to see a guy just disappear like that. So I know they still like his potential, they still like what he can bring, they still like the same things they liked about him. Excuse me, but he certainly can't have another year where the game looks bigger than him.
Right.
And it did.
And you hope that, you know, some guys have that spell where they just can't seem to do what the major component of their job is, which is catch the football.
Well, and a lot going wrong around him.
Right.
He's a young kid.
He had a quarterback that you didn't know where the ball was going to come.
Right.
You couldn't count on consistent accuracy from the quarterback. That fed into it.
So he was good when everything sort of was going well with the team. When things sort of got squirrely last year, sort of disappeared, probably would happen with a lot of young players. We'll see if he can bounce back from it because he has to.
All right, when we return to the moment, I mentioned Football Morning in America is Peter King's new column, or relatively new column, and he reached out to 25, as he called them, smart NFL people that each picked just one way to make pro football a better game. We often do this show kind of in the off season, but we'll just rip through some of these suggestions, see which ones look like they could be accomplished, which ones are a little bit fanciful, and which ones we like the best out of the ones that were offered up. Some of them very similar to others because, you know, you ask a guy, you got one idea, you're going to get some overlap. So we'll read through those a little bit for you on the other side as well. Mike Dempsey, Tony Smith, and John Osier, 641-1010 on the phone lines or the text line driven by Duval Ford. If you want to be a part of the program, it's Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
From the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at TIAA Bank Field, this is Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
All right, we are live at the bank. We'll be outside the bank tomorrow. Sunny. It's supposed to be less than 10% chance. It's like 5% chance every day this week. Should have abundant sunshine.
Nice.
Tony, I saw Saturday's forecast is like 97 degrees.
Oh, boy.
Welcome to summer. Yeah. Summer doesn't come for like another full month. I hope people realize. Like a month from tomorrow is the beginning of summer. It's going to be 97 degrees this week.
Yeah, I'll be in a bad mood.
Lovely.
Not that I'm.
No, but you'll have the floppy hat, and that makes everybody else happy.
Does it?
Yeah, it does. Okay, you often go with the long sleeve shirt from time to time out there too. Right? Like this, you know, the light kind of t-shirt kind of thing.
Yeah, I've got. Yeah, I have some Jag shirts that I'll throw on in that capacity.
Very stylish.
But I still, even though I know that it doesn't make you hotter, there's a mental block I have with
about
long sleeves in the summer. Yeah.
Oh, I'm just like, the people in my neighborhood think I'm a nut because I'm back on the walking kick. You know, I'm like obsessive. I'll walk now.
Right.
I'll try to be healthy for like 3 months and then I'll not for a while. And but when I walk, I'm out there with the long sleeve shirt every time.
That's smart. Smart.
You know, long sleeve shirt, and I wear the bandana under my hat.
Right.
Like I loosen the hat up and so I don't get sunburn on my neck.
You and Vito and Tom Coughlin.
We're very similar, the three of us, in many, many ways.
Probably only in that way.
Let's see. Vito is a Hall of Fame voter.
Right.
Right. And a Hall of Fame journalist. Right. He's in the Hall of Fame in the journalist.
Right.
Tom Coughlin may end up in the Hall of Fame one
true.
Day. That's where the similarity ends.
You,
2 out of 3.
I believe you've watched the Hall of Fame ceremony.
I'm going to the Baseball Hall of Fame next month for the first time.
Good deal.
In my life. Going to Cooperstown early next month as part of my summer vacation.
You've heard of the Hall of Fame.
I have heard of the Hall of Fame. It's
perfect.
In Columbus, Ohio?
All three of you.
Oh, Canton, Ohio. That's what. E.T.'s back with us. E., how you doing, brother?
What's happening?
Had a couple days off and a little family time, but a big celebration. Cliff Averill, as folks may well know, is your cousin, and he has, I guess, officially decided to call it a retirement and a career. Pretty nice career for him, huh?
Yeah, 10 years finally. He knew that he was going to call it quits, but couldn't make it official, so now it's kind of official, like official.
He's got the ring, man. I'm sure he's got zero regrets about how his career went. You know, as you, I saw your Facebook post about him, just a crazy Haitian kid made good, and now he's doing this thing, I'm sure, at a very high level up there in the Pacific Northwest, right?
Yeah, they love him up there, and, you know, he's doing real good up there. You know, he brings a different aspect to it, so, you know, it's working for him.
All right, well, it's good to have you back. Not that, you know, JJ's always a good guy to fill in, but it's good to have the core.
Oh, I was definitely listening in. Even though I was going, I was listening.
Yeah, what was somebody, what was it? Was it
D-Rock?
What did D-Rock say that you commented on?
Because, well, I was listening, but I was at an appointment with my mom, and I was listening because he brought the donuts in.
Oh, that's right. He did. He stiffed you on the donuts.
Stiffed me on the donuts.
Knowing 1010XL, those donuts may still be sitting in the studio, though. I mean, that's happened from time to time where they've lasted for days. All righty. Good to have you back.
Yes, sir.
Couple on the text line here. We mentioned Tom Coughlin. We're going to re-air that interview that he did on the drill this morning out at his Celebrity Golf Classic. This person on the text line, driven by Duval Ford, asks, why doesn't TC talk to the media more often? He only does it when it benefits his charity. He should have to, quote, face the fire every once in a while, right? Should have to, or would we like him to? I think everybody in the local media would love more access to Tom Coughlin. There's no question about it.
They'll talk to him, but the league rules are the league rules, and
doesn't have to make himself available.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the GM speaks, the head coach speaks. You know, the league wants decision makers at the podium on certain dates. Don't really specify that it has to be specific decision makers. So that's what they do.
Right. And he obviously is a decision maker. He's got as much clout in that.
But there's
department.
No league ruling where it says this guy with final say
correct
has to speak X number of times. There's no rule that says owners have to speak in X number. You know, it's they just haven't gone there yet. And when Tom does speak on the occasions he does, which is this year during draft, before draft, have been the times where he's spoken to the gathered media. He's always very good and very succinct, direct, and gives you something and moves the story forward. So, and he spoke when Foles signed. So that's three in this offseason, which I believe is more than last offseason.
I think it is as well. But honestly, if you didn't hear from Tom again for months and months and months, it wouldn't be a surprise. At this point, Tom.
Oh, I would be a little surprised if you heard from him soon. I mean,
boy, that's exactly what I said.
Until the end of the season,
right? And right, truly, could be the end of the season now. Yeah. Before or the next time that and look, there is some quid pro quo, right? Like we as a station, it's not that Jaguars Today is out there, but we benefit from it. I mean, Dan and Jeff are out broadcasting at some of his major events. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, we're happy to I love the J Fund. I think all that you separate the two realms, the charitable and the football side of things. Can't separate them entirely because the charitable would never have taken off without the football side of things. But I think Tom honestly would prefer to talk less football in those situations. I remember last year the radiothon, he came on and it was was surprised at how much football he ended up talking during the season.
Probably true.
So anyway, that's that. Here's another one. Quoting me on the text line.
Good.
I did say this. I said, I just hope Game of Thrones ends the way that makes everybody the maddest. Right? I don't really care. It's not like my show. Like, I enjoy the show. I watched it for all the seasons that it was on, all 8 seasons. But it's not like one of those that Sunday night it's going to be amazing. Like, if I didn't watch it until Tuesday or Wednesday many times, I didn't
care.
Okay,
right.
I just watch it, and I wanted to keep up with the story. We want to see if I'm onto something, and this person requested that I say this following quote. Quote, Gardner Minshew is the next coming of Tom Brady. End quote. I've said it. I have to do it with the same spite, though, they said that I did in reference to Game of Thrones. Sixth round pick, may we speak it into existence.
Sure.
Go find that supermodel wife and hopefully bring us 6 rings.
It's my quarterback.
For it.
It'd be great.
Yeah.
I
fantastic. I'm just trying to help the people here, John. They requested that. Someone requested that. So there you have it. It's out there.
It's important that the people have a voice.
It is out there in the ether right now. All right, let's get to some of these Peter King suggestions to talk to a wide variety of names that you will recognize. Starting with Ron Wolf, he said the way, Pro Football Hall of Fame general manager with Packers and Seattle?
Green Bay.
For sure.
Tampa had a role early.
I'm thinking of
Seattle's what he's
Green Bay, what he's most known for, right? Who was the coach up there under
Holmgren?
He went to Seattle. That's what I think.
Yeah, Ron, I think, was Tampa, primarily Green Bay.
He says cut down on flags would make football better. I spent 38 active years in pro football, came not knowing anything about pass interference, and guess what? After 38 years, I left without knowing what pass interference is. It's the way he put it. So cutting down flags in general, keeping the game moving, keeping the interest level. You get those stoppages in play, and it drives people crazy, right? So that's his suggestion. Rick Goslin, who wrote for, Dallas Morning News forever. Rick Goslin used to do the best NFL mock draft out of any member of the media. He only did one. He did three, right, Tony? He did one where he did what he thought should happen. He did one based on his rankings of players without taking into account, like, needs of teams so much.
Right.
And then he did a final one, and he was plugged in. And it would come out, like, the day before or even the morning of the NFL draft, first round.
And before the internet, executives did everything they could to get that before the draft started. Rick's was far and away the most tied in media guy with the draft.
Totally tied. Like, it wouldn't get all the picks right, obviously. No one can. But he would have a few connections in there that nobody had been talking about. And, great stuff. And then he just stopped doing it. Just kind of get tired of doing it.
Well, no, he was the Dallas beat guy. And the NFL beat guy. And then when the Dallas Morning News moved him to general columns.
Is that why he stopped?
And off the NFL, he didn't think that he could give his mock draft. He wasn't as tight end. He wasn't making the calls before the draft that he had been before because he was covering NBA and baseball. So he couldn't – he didn't want to have his mocks or his draft information not be what it should be. So he stopped doing it.
Okay. He says he would help defenses by extending the bump zone. I don't think anybody is looking to help defenses. I mean,
nope.
Right? The whole wave of everything is points, 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 points. And to make it would it make it a better product? It might, but
they didn't even expand rules about diving a guy's legs until a couple years ago.
Right.
I mean, yeah, they're not looking to help defense.
And what is a better product? A better product is in the eye of the beholder, right? Mm-hmm. And the average fan. Now, football people may say that's going to make it a better game. It's going to even things out. Well, the people who are the eyeballs on the sets are not all, quote, football people. There are a lot of people
that just because it's a good idea doesn't mean people like it.
Dean Blandino, this is, the Fox officiating analyst and former vice president of officiating in the NFL, says make every play replay reviewable. Every play. So take it from a replay guy. You don't like that idea. Not what if it was the same amount of challenges, but it was just open to reviewing anything?
See, I think the open to reviewing anything at the end of games. I wonder what play is not going to get reviewed at the end of 2 minutes.
Well, I think there's beyond the 2 minutes. Like, if I think it opens a Pandora's box. Like, what if you What if you review? This guy had an illegal block or illegal formation,
precisely,
and then you notice holding on the replay. Are you allowed to call the holding penalty, or do we have to pretend like that didn't happen? I don't know.
Well, and are you going to review every play for holding?
Well, not every play,
right?
But if you're talking about in the 2 minute situation,
well, holding's so vague. Again, I'm always wary of replaying something where it's easy to sit in a bar and have a two-hour argument over whether it was holding or not.
Pete Carroll's suggestion is kill instant replay, or if not get rid of it, at least decrease the use of it.
Talk about opposite ends.
Right, opposite ends. Booger McFarland, Scott Hansen, both talking about ways to liven up the onside kick, whether it's an actual onside kick or whether
got to do something with
McFarland that. McFarland said, if you're a trailing team in the fourth quarter, give them a chance to have the ball one play on the 10-yard line. If they score a quote-unquote touchdown, then they get the ball on their own 30-yard line. They don't get any points out of it. It's like, instead of having like a 4th and 15, have suggested, you've got a condensed field, and if they fail, then the receiving team would get it at the 50, at midfield. So that's his suggestion on it. But
they have to do something about that.
Mark Leibovich is a chief national correspondent of the New York Times Magazine. Said put bat ownership up for a public vote. Never going to happen, obviously, right? And they own the team, right? They're basically, he's saying every 5 years, the fan base or whoever bought tickets in the last 5 years gets to vote whether that guy gets to keep the team if they're doing a good job.
That might be one of the most ridiculous ideas I've ever heard.
Hunter Henry ensure that each team gets a possession in overtime. I think that's got a lot of support behind it. Lindsey Jones, national NFL writer for The Athletic, be more progressive about players using marijuana. I think the next CBA is going to tell potentially a big story on that. It's becoming more acceptable in society, whether for medicinal or recreational use. And
that's going to happen at some point, but it'll be a long time coming for the league just because of the
– I don't know if it is going to be a long time coming for the league because what is their benefit to – testing guys for marijuana. How many guys get popped for marijuana, by the way? Not that many.
Right.
Right? There really aren't that many. So if they can get a concession from the players in bargaining and just drop it, you know, kind of like out of sight, out of mind.
Yeah. I just say that because typically the league drags its feet hard behind society.
They've been dragging their feet forever. Chris Nowitzki, co-founder and CEO of Concussion Legacy Foundation, says eliminate tackle football until high school. Everyone's a little bit self-serving. Whatever their particular thing is. Brandon Carr, defensive back, former defensive back, take away some of the protection from quarterbacks. So, you know, it's all through the eye of the beholder. Let's see here. Get rid of the chain gangs. Seed the playoffs by record, not division title. That's what Eric Winston, who is the head of the NFL Players Association, suggested, which is interesting. I guess he's saying the division winners would still automatically get into the postseason,
right. But
then you would just seed it based on record.
Yeah, I'd be surprised if the league ever went to that because there is a want to reward teams for winning a division.
I agree with that. I think that you'll see widespread acceptance of marijuana.
I agree with you.
You see that happen. Calais Campbell, here we go. Make every healthy player active on game day. That's one rule he would like to change, he would propose. If teams can dress and play all 53 guys on Sunday, it would help decrease injuries incurred during competition because it would allow more rest and substitutions. They do it because they're trying to even the playing field because they know some teams might have five or six injured guys who wouldn't be able to be active, and if another team's completely healthy, it would provide too much of a competitive disadvantage.
It's always a weird little quirky rule. I've always thought it was odd that they didn't just have everybody active.
So anyway, you can check that out. Just Google Football Morning in America and Peter King's column. Talk to 25 different movers and shakers associated with the game on how they would single-handedly, with one move, improve professional football. Mike Dempsey, Tony Smith, and John Osher here with you. Coming back to Dayton football, the Roland Reich roll around the National Football League as well. It's Jaguars today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Now, Jaguars today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. And now, this date in football history.
All right, got a quartet of birthdays. They're all still kicking these days, including Bud Grant, Harold Bud Grant, born on this date in 1927. Happy 92nd. Yeah, pretty good stuff there. He was the 14th overall pick by Philadelphia in 1950. Ended up playing 2 years for the Eagles as a defensive end, but of course, best known as the coach of the Vikings from 1967 through 1985. He went 158, 96, and 5 as a head coach. Four times the NFC champion. 0-for-4 in the Super Bowl. Bud Grant, nevertheless, inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. As was Leroy Kelly, 77 years young today. He was an 8th-round pick by the Browns in 1964. And what an 8th-round pick he turned out to be. He went on to win the 1968 Burt Bell Award as the Player of the Year in the National Football League, one of 2 years in which he led the league in rushing. 3 consecutive years he led the league in rushing touchdowns, a 6-time Pro Bowler, 3-time first-team All-Pro, and a member of the All-1960s team. Leroy Kelly was a Hall of Fame inductee in 1994. A couple of guys with brief Jaguar careers born on this date. A happy 39th to Kasim Osgood, 3-time Pro Bowl special teamer with the San Diego Chargers. Came and played very good special teams with the Jags, along with Montel Owens.
39, you said?
He's 39 years old, Kasim Osgood. How about this? LaRon Robinson, only 34 years old today,
right?
I mean, think about that. He's been out of the league since 2012 when the Jags, after a big half season in Dallas, signed him to a pretty good money contract at the time. And Never forget, I told the story many times. Out at practice one day in the off season, and they had just gone from the turf field to the all grass on the three practice fields. Remember, they used to have the one turf and the two grass, and with the exception of right where that seam used to be between the turf and the grass, there was a strip of concrete that was maybe 2 inches wide, and LaRon Robinson went up for a ball that was over his head, and as he was coming backwards, he fell on the ground, and his head snapped back, and the back of his helmet landed right on the center of that concrete, practically right at my feet. Never forgot it, and that, I think he went on to have like four concussions that year.
It's literally the width of a brick.
That's exactly what it was. Right. One brick's width, 2 or 3 inches wide, and it just so happened that he hit center mass with the back of his helmet and went on to catch 24 passes for 252 yards, never a touchdown for the Jaguars. Just incredibly
that
bad
one year.
Luck. That was it. He was done. I mean, I do believe he ended up with four concussions throughout the park.
That sounds right.
He came back, went out with another concussion, came back, and then it was done. It was over with. So hopefully he was smart with the guaranteed portion of that contract that he signed. LaRon Robinson, 34 years young today, and that is what we have on this date in football history.
Now, let's roll around the NFL with Roland Reich Plumbing, where quality and experience count.
Defensive end Chris Long announced his retirement over the weekend on social media. Long tweeted, quote, "Cheers, been a hell of a journey, 11 years, and I can honestly say I put my soul into every minute of it, highs and lows. I've seen them both, and I appreciate the perspective, gratitude, and love to those who lifted me up." End quote. Long was the second overall selection in the 2008 NFL Draft, won two Super Bowl rings in back-to-back years in 2016 with the New England Patriots and then 2017 with the Philadelphia Eagles. The prosecutors in the case against New England Patriots owner Bob Kraft are appealing the decision by a judge to suppress the video evidence in his solicitation case, so that continues. The Houston Texans have released tight end Ryan Griffin. Griffin is facing charges of vandalism and public intoxication after he allegedly punched out a window in a hotel last month in Nashville, Tennessee. Adam Schefter has reported that the extension talks between the Philadelphia Eagles and quarterback Carson Wentz have begun and that he expects it will get done sometime this offseason. Wentz has gone 23-17 as a starter through his first 3 years while throwing 70 touchdowns and just 28 interceptions. Each of the last two seasons have been shortened due to injury for Carson, including 2017 when many thought he was on his way to an MVP before he got hurt. Nick Foles took over, led the Eagles to their first Super Bowl win in franchise history over the New England Patriots. And the Indianapolis Colts have signed former Denver Broncos quarterback Chad Kelly, who was released by Denver after a misdemeanor criminal trespassing arrest last year. Kelly has pled guilty to the arrest, and the league is reportedly still looking into the situation regarding any future suspension for the quarterback.
Thank you, Tony. You could have Patrick Mahomes at the end of round 3, early round 4. You could have Carson Wentz in round 11. If you answered Patrick Mahomes, it's why you probably don't win as many fantasy leagues as you'd like to. All right? You can just wait. On those QBs.
Yeah, you were getting Wentz in 11 and then
Lamar Jackson
in 12.
There's a lot, and from a fantasy standpoint, he's not going to be a good quarterback. He's got job security. He's going to run the ball a ton. Yeah. But you look at Mahomes, you just look at that Kansas City offense that's going to roll in here in week one. No Kareem Hunt.
Right.
Damian Williams at right now is kind of the incumbent, although it's like, how hyped will Carlos Hyde be for that game? To come to Jacksonville, right? to stick it to them, if at all possible. Doesn't mean, because you're hyped, doesn't mean you're going to have that kind of success. You got to believe, even if you think that Tyreek Hill is not a goner NFL-wise, and there's no...
Can't believe he'd be playing in that game.
I don't think he's right. I got to believe he's at least going to miss half the season. The NFL does not need... a conviction or a charge, as we saw in the Ezekiel Elliott case.
That high profile
and a track record of domestic violence, and even just the threat alone to the mother of his child, telling her that she should be afraid of him, and that may be enough. Roger Goodell, it's kind of out of sight, out of mind right now. Because the Chiefs have separated him from the team. He's not allowed to participate in any
team
activities.
Right, but it wouldn't be
activities.
Out of sight, out of mind if he's active for that game.
Oh, no.
Right.
No, but they have several months to determine what's going to happen with Tyreek Hill, see if anything more comes out. Is there further investigation being done by the authorities, you know, after the audio tape got leaked and
I guess
that.
In theory, though, if they're pushing it and it's a suspension, he could be appealing the suspension.
It could be.
Playing, so that
depends on when the suspension comes down.
Right.
And right, but there are a lot of things. I mean, the Chiefs themselves have separated them from the team.
Correct.
So
yeah.
Who's to say? But that offense could look drastically different.
Week one. If it's still the offense that it was beginning of last season, then credit Patrick Mahomes. Because
absolutely,
it would be a whole lot.
I mean, you're looking at the
and
guy
Kelsey.
Who was probably the most prolific receiver in the game, by some metrics, the most mm-hmm. prolific receiver in the game last year, in Tyreek Hill, and you know, Kareem Hunt, really good player. Is it the system? We'll find out. Andy Reid typically produces big numbers for his running.
They
backs.
Won't be bad.
No, they'll be good.
But the special dynamic.
Right. Will Sammy Watkins make it health-wise to September?
Which is always
never
the
know.
Big key with him.
Yeah,
right.
Absolutely. All right, we'll step aside here, and when we return in the moment, you'll hear the conversation that Dan and Jeff had on the drill this morning with the Executive Vice President of Football Operations for your Jacksonville Jaguars. That, of course, would be Tom Coughlin out at the J Fund Celebrity Golf Classic this morning out at Sawgrass. That's coming up next. This is Jaguars Today. Mike Dempsey, Tony Smith, and John Osier here with you on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Now more Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, as we've mentioned several times this morning, Executive Vice President of Football Operations Tom Coughlin was out at Sawgrass this morning with the J Fund Celebrity Golf Classic, and Dan Hicken and Jeff Prosser got a chance to speak to him about football and the charity as well, so let's listen in.
How are you doing? You ready to go
great.
Out to 17 today?
I am ready to
got
go to
hat?
17.
He's got his hat.
Got my hat.
Yeah. What's the closest you've hit it on 17 through all the
Are you serious? I've had a couple of two-footers.
Yeah. Serious?
Yeah.
Back
Are you
down.
Kidding me?
I think he kind of inferred some implication that he hadn't hit it close. I just ask it.
I hope.
Now, when Marone comes through or Caldwell comes through.
I don't want to say anything because I don't want him to say anything to me. So, you know, about the swing and all that stuff. So I just try to quietly. Uh-huh. And I will tell you a little bit of my strategy.
Oh,
now.
Okay.
Okay.
All right, all right.
If I look over at 16.
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And they're not quite on their way over to where I am and the other group finishes, mm-hmm. I quick hit three or four balls up there.
Yeah, practice.
Because if I can get one on, then I just stand there and say, well, there you go. There's your ball.
That might be cheating.
I wonder how
Oh, no, that's not cheating.
All right, that's good.
You know, we should have, and this is, we should have kept track because, you know, not many people have hit as many shots at 17.
That's
Tom
a lot.
Coughlin.
No, yeah, that's right.
I mean, through the years, if you think about it.
Think about the number of balls I've contributed.
Yes.
You know how they come around, swim down,
yes,
and save and get all the balls out?
You should mark every one of them.
Put initial. Yeah.
You know what, though? They should be given – that money should come back to the J Fund, don't
yes,
you think?
That's
absolutely.
A good point.
Yeah, absolutely. Speaking
much.
Of the J Fund,
really do.
Another great evening last night. You were dynamic, as always. And
and Sexton were outstanding.
Well,
I mean, that's the best. You guys get better. It's hard to believe, but you do get better.
Thank you. But what I like are the kids who are here. The kids who get to make it here. There's winners of scholarship fund from the J Fund. There's kids who are battling. There are artists. And the people here. You know, give them standing ovations.
I love it. Every youngster that gets invited down the
right.
down the aisle
right.
is standing automatic standing
right.
ovation.
Right, yeah. Right.
And you can tell Dan and Brian get a little bit extra when it comes to introducing them.
Yeah,
you know, there's lots of voice inflection and stuff like that. And it's so much fun to see those kids come down.
Right.
Because, you know, they're little.
Sure.
And all,
oh,
of a sudden,
yeah.
all of a sudden they're up. And how about what Nick did last night?
Wasn't that something? That was good.
He told that.
Yeah, I knew you would love that because and one of your themes is always team. It's a team here, right?
Team.
It's Team J Fund, you know.
It's all team.
We're all the people who come every year. And it's great because a lot of familiar faces. So it's selflessness. And so Foles is getting ready to get introduced. And obviously, Nick Foles, they're going to bring the roof down for Nick Foles, right?
Yeah.
And so there's a kind of a buildup. And what he did is he picks up the little girl right before him and carries her down the aisle.
Yeah.
And it was beautiful. It was a great moment. By the way, there's Nick Foles.
It was
too.
A classic. Yeah. And then there was recognition of Savannah, which was really, really nice.
That was the young
and
girl,
then,
right?
And then you know, a couple of words about Nick, and boom.
Yeah, yeah.
It's so, yeah, I mean,
the crowd got into it.
We've told you every time we talk to you at these.
Yes,
it's chills. Awesome. It is.
Yeah. It's really chills
is.
Up and down.
You had a number, too, and you guys, the J Fund introduced a number like a child dealing with cancer.
Oh, my God.
It's like $833,000. $833,000 in care is on average for one child. So, you know, if you think about that, it's just it's mind blowing.
Well,
so,
it's an incredible effort. Yeah. It's just awesome.
Yeah. I mean, so
just,
anything that we can do, you know, and I made the terrible mistake. And I know it goes to a good cause, so I'm happy. But when I bring my wife, I've got all these auction items now I got to take home today.
That's great.
It is great. Yeah.
It's the idea.
I'm glad. I'm happy for her.
You look great. You look pretty cheery.
She works the back room. It's funny that the way the wives do that, too. And I see more than one.
Yeah.
I saw Karen Capers doing the same thing.
Dom's I'm happy.
Up here are doing something. Dom's
shopping. They like to shop, Tom.
But there were some things last night.
Yeah.
Oh, there's some big timers in there.
Wow.
Oh.
You know, what did you buy me, Dan?
Mahomes, the MVP.
No, we don't go for that stuff. We got the Lily Pulitzer carry on. Which is beautiful.
Oh, that's wonderful.
I'm so happy for her.
I'm so happy that your wife has the green light to do whatever she wants.
Yeah. You should bring
happy
that in
life,
one day.
Happy life, we all know. So. Yeah.
Tom, you mentioned Nick. What's the challenge even for a veteran quarterback when he goes to a new place and probably assumes the biggest expectation of leadership in his career to this point as far as the destination and being on a new team?
No doubt. And the way he's gone about it is very interesting. He works, you know, his teammates really, really well. He does, you use the word selfless. That's the approach he uses. I think the second day he was here, he's over at Fournette's early in the morning, and they're going over the installation for that day, you know, kind of thing. And, he's out there working just like everybody else is working, and his presence is what's important. It's kind of like that thing that I insinuate a lot. I don't know if anybody's listening, but, you know, don't tell me, show me.
Right.
Let's stop so much verbiage, and let's work it. Let's work it.
Deeds, not words, was the way it was said back in the day.
Yeah.
Although when you introduced him, you could tell that how important the team aspect is to him. But those aren't just words to him. He really looks forward to being part of the team and getting to know these guys. And so we'll get to see him for the first time this week. You've seen him out there and about, and you were telling me yesterday you like the whole group of quarterbacks.
I do. I like the group. Yeah. I like the young ones. I like the way they've fallen in, if you will, and working hard. You know, Tanner Lee was here last night. Mm-hmm. It was really nice. And I just think these young guys are – it's a step up from where we've been.
Mm-hmm.
And quite frankly, I look forward to all the competition that goes with the way they will compete in camp and then participate in games.
It's this time of year. Is mindset and establishing that team identity as important as the actual schematics of what you're able to do?
Probably more.
Yeah.
More important.
Yep.
More important. It is what it's all about. Think back to when you played Little League or whatever it was, the first time you got involved in some kind of team athletics, it was a kind of a bonding kind of a thing that made you feel good, made you feel great about your team, made it important, put it into a priority, made you responsible for your teammates, made you look forward to having an opportunity to contribute. All those things go along with it, right? And that's what is quite frankly somewhat missing today when you don't have total involvement.
What did you think of? You had your rookies out there. What did you think of Allen and Taylor, the two big guys that you got in with your first couple of picks?
They came in. They're good people.
Uh-huh.
They just went to work.
Right.
They got a little personality, you know, and it's going to be real interesting to develop those guys and to get them involved more and more with the veterans as we start this phase three. And so I'm looking forward to that.
Mm-hmm. Where's your confidence level on a bounce back year? I mean, you know, right? It's important for franchises to, if you have a blip, get back to where you were 2 years ago and stay there, or even better moving forward.
You got that, that's what has to happen.
Yeah.
That's what has to happen. And, you know, we're firing in that direction. And everybody's on board and trying as hard as we can to consistency being such a key factor, you know, get that bad taste out of our mouth and move forward.
You know, I want to wrap up with this with the coach as the Godfather joins us here on the program. Listen, on Saturday I got to watch you and Mrs. McGillis sit down and kind of have a conversation. Yeah. And we, you know, we talk about the here and now, but you were so affected and moved by Jay McGillis, who passed away at the age of 21, just a young man with his whole life in front of him and a young man who looked like he was going to achieve great things. And she talked about how bittersweet. She's so grateful for the legacy that you have created for her son, who would be overwhelmed by all this attention, the fact that his name is on this and a foundation that has raised millions and millions of dollars. I just I always like to remember Jay, too, though, and see the just the love between the Coughlin family and the McGillis family as you go forward. But I guess my question would be to you is, you had made a pledge to your wife back then that if you were ever in the position, you were going to do something to remember Jay. And what was it was a, that inspired you about him?
Well, first of all, it was a we. You know, if we ever get a chance to give back, we're going to give back in the spirit of Jay McGillis.
Right.
And as you, Dan, got to talk to more and more to Pat McGillis.
Mm-hmm.
Who is a
great lady.
A marvelous
lady.
A
sweet lady.
I mean,
yeah.
You know, she's a school teacher.
Yeah.
So when, you know, she comes from very humble background, mm-hmm. you know, she always steps back, mm-hmm. you know, never steps out front. That's not her position or
right.
her role.
Right.
But when she's when she had an opportunity to sit in a conversation
mm-hmm.
and to, you know, highlight some of the things that we remember about Jay and so on and so forth, then she goes full circle.
Yeah.
And it was really, really a wonderful opportunity.
Yeah, it was nice.
And I was kidding before because I said, you know what's going to happen now? You're going to get her wound up, and then she's going to – I won't be able to get a word in. It's not quite like that, but she did a tremendous job, I thought.
She was – you know, we had him in a television setting, and so, you know, she's kind of a quiet, you know, elegant, demure lady, and – but once she got going, she did. Yeah, she got going.
She was good.
Yeah,
what a relationship, right, between the families through
great.
The years.
It's unbelievable. I wish people could see it, and I don't know if we've shown it enough through the years, but it's – and the whole McGillis family, I mean, all the other – his brothers and sisters come, and they were also very involved in Jay's illness as well. I mean, just
Kathy,
some heartbreaking stuff.
You know the story I always tell about Kathy. Yeah. Kathy moved into his – hospital room.
Yeah.
She didn't want him to be alone. She left. She was interning at a law firm in Washington, D.C., came home,
right.
moved right into his hospital room.
Yeah.
And she just fought as hard as she possibly could to make, you know, that's the thing that I don't think people really understand is the idea you don't want these kids to be alone. You don't want them to have any kind of a sense because quite frankly, you saw that with Jay.
I mean,
the first. I'm not going to mention the hospital or anything, but the first hospital he was in, the cancer floor. He was in a room way down the hall. It was dark, you know, and I
depressing.
It really was.
Yeah.
And I felt so bad because, you know, it was early on, and there wasn't the family hadn't quite grasped the idea that they were going to be involved 24/7,
right?
You know, and but it was that idea, and that's why when you visit, you know, over at Wolfson's and Newmore's and the cancer floor, it's bright,
right?
You know, it's bright. There's lots of windows. There's lots of light. There's, you know, the family stay right in the room with the kids, just like the Jay's parents did with him, but it just there's that whole idea of making them as comfortable as they can so that they can heal. Because what they go through, I mean, you cannot imagine what these kids, and all of us. I mean, I told the story last night about going to the hospital the other day.
Yeah.
walking into a room with an 18-month-old little boy with a pick line all the way up underneath his skin,
right,
all the way up to the top of his head.
God, we complain about headaches.
Yeah. And that's why we do what we do, but that's why – and it's great to see a lot of your former players who come back to help you out, some of the broadcasters from ESPN
absolutely.
Who come. The
guys
the
are great. They're so loyal.
And all the people of Jacksonville who, if they don't participate in this, might participate in the wine tasting. If they don't participate in the wine tasting, they participate in the radiothon.
Yeah.
I mean, it's been but it's really a selfless act of love that I love so much about our community. So anyway.
They have, and you can't say enough about that.
Yeah.
I mean, they have rallied around this cause like nobody's business.
More and every year.
Yeah. More every year.
More than the previous
year. More every year.
Really.
But we appreciate you.
Thank you.
And we look forward to getting some good video
thank
of you.
Thank you very much.
Maybe duck hooking one. Hold
on.
Oh, no. I'll be banging them out there
like
today.
That.
I will be banging
the fire
them out
going?
There.
He's kind of fired up. You know, I like it.
Steely
like
blue
it.
Eyes are going to come out. You know,
yeah.
Somebody talk smack.
I only wish I could express myself with a golf club. You know what I mean? Because I have a little trouble doing that.
Don't we all?
I just crawl away from the spot most of the time. You know, oh well, one of those old well deals.
Yes,
you know,
yes, sir. Well, we appreciate
thank
you.
You guys.
Thank you, coach.
Appreciate you.
All right,
thanks for being here.
Absolutely, that's Tom Coughlin, Executive Vice President of Football Ops.
From the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at TIAA Bank Field, this is Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, thanks again for the boys on the drill for sitting down with Tom Coughlin this morning out at the J Fund Celebrity Golf Classic. If you missed that interview, it's always available on 1010XL.com in the on-demand section. One more to go for us before we turn it over to XL Primetime. Here on the text line driven by Duval Ford, we're talking about wide receivers earlier, and we'll get to our predictions and some of the responses we got to the question of the day presented by Gravely Zero Turn Mowers, an American workhorse since 1916. We ask who will be the three players who catch the most passes for the Jags, regardless of position this year. And so we're talking about DJ Chark and what he did or did not do last year, what our expectations are for him this year. On the text line, I just want people to kind of remember, when it comes to DJ Chark, everybody called him a pick for the future, not saying we should dismiss the disappointment from last season. And injuries, plus the quarterback situation was bad. The future is now, so let's go. Look, absolutely.
This is
go,
the time.
Go get it. You
gotta
know? I mean, look, wide receivers, we've had this discussion many times over the years. Wide receivers, historically, there used to be a theory in fantasy football, third-year breakout. And then it was the debate, is it a third-year breakout or a fourth-year breakout? And there was a lot of statistical evidence to back up that good receivers – take 3 or 4 years to really blossom. Go look at Reggie Wayne, John, the guy you covered. Good player, but didn't become a great player.
Until really year four?
Yeah, about year four with Reggie Wayne, and he's a good example of it. Now, we've gotten spoiled to some degree with the A.J. Green, Julio Jones year. They both came in and were really good. Odell Beckham was great right off the bat. So
there are outliers, but to think that just because a guy doesn't do that means he's not going to be a good player is completely wrong.
Look at Tyreek Hill, for an example. Okay, Tyreek Hill, no matter what Jalen Ramsey thinks, is a Pro Bowl level receiver. And granted, he was a Pro Bowl return guy prior to that, but he last year was spectacular as a receiver and an offensive weapon. His first year in that Andy Reid offense. Now, granted, he wasn't very productive in college either. Didn't have big numbers. DJ Chark didn't have huge numbers in college. He had big average per catch numbers. I'm not comparing these guys. They're not the same player. But the point being, it was a good back half of the first year for Tyreek Hill, and now here he is in his third, fourth season. He's just this weapon that you can't stop. Well, DJ Chark missed that opportunity, as we talked about, to have that last month to really build on going into year two. So,
and nothing I've seen from DJ makes me think he can't do it.
He's a hard worker.
But at this point, and the point that Jeff Logman makes a lot, I agree with. The fact that he's a good special teams player, is diligent in that area, shines in that area, works in that area, bodes very well for him putting in the work to be good at the other position as well. So I anticipate he'll be much better, much more productive. But he doesn't have to be a 1,200-yard Pro Bowl guy this year.
No.
But he has to be much more productive. I think he needs to be in that top three and be a guy you can depend on.
I think he needs to be a guy just when he's on the field that defenses have to respect him and at least consider rolling a safety over to him. I mean, if you got 4.34 speed and you're 6'3",
mm-hmm.
show you can get off the line of scrimmage consistently and connect, have Foles connect on a few with you downfield. It works both ways. Initially, I got to believe teams are going to come in, Kansas City's going to come in and say, we're shutting down Leonard Fournette.
Right.
I mean, that's where the main focus is. Then we'll worry about everything else after that. So
got to prove it.
Early in the season, these guys are going to have opportunities to make plays down the field if they can protect up mm-hmm. front. And, you know, early in the season, you would hope the offensive line is as healthy as it's going to be at any point. So
you would hope after 4 or 5 weeks they've done enough to force teams to start rethinking what you just said.
No question. I mean, you look at the model that the Seattle Seahawks are building their offense on right now. And granted, Russell Wilson's a well-established, multi-time Pro Bowler, all that stuff. He's in a class ahead of Nick Foles, no matter how you feel about Foles. I think most people would agree with that. But this is a team that ran the ball as much or nearly as much as any team in the National Football League last year. And they spent a first-round pick on Rashad Penny, but it was Chris Carson who led the way. And they've got this two-headed monster. Russell Wilson was super efficient throwing touchdowns, but didn't the attempts were really down. But now they go out there. You got Tyler Lockett, who can already stretch a field. You bring in DK Metcalf, who's an absolute size speed freak, even more so than DJ Chark is, and it's pick your poison. You want to stack the box to play the run? We're going to shoot right down the field, and we're going to try to hit you over the top with quick strikes. If you adjust to that, we're going to go back to what we wanted to do in the first place, and that's pound it right down your throat with these two backs. So
that's where this team, if this team can get into that model, I don't know if they're going to have the efficiency that Seattle has yet because they're behind in the curve.
It's the concept.
But you got to think that's what they want to do.
Right. You know, and look, you've got speed. I think D.D. Westbrook can get down the field, mm-hmm. right? I think all these guys, I think that's a common denominator. Marquise Lee, if he's 100% healthy, Chris Connolly's got great speed. They can all, get down the field. I know Nick Foles, the metrics show he's really good when he gets the ball out of his hands very quickly. Mm-hmm. And you know, that doesn't mean you're not going to have occasions where you're going to have, you know, deeper drops, longer developing routes and things like that. And, if they're biting on play action with Leonard Fournette, that's key. You got to keep him healthy. You got to have that effective running game. You know, it's a whole
right, he's got to be more
whole
effective.
Cycle.
Right,
got to be way more effective. All right, so let's go down the line here. I'm struggling with the third one because I do think I'd vote for Dede for sure to be in the top three.
Mm-hmm.
I would put Leonard Fournette in there because I'm not going to presume that he's going to get hurt. Okay, I mean,
at this point, you can't. You got to figure, okay, 14 games for both those guys, they're probably in the top two.
Right. You can if you want to, but I don't think, you know, and I think all the tight ends are going to kind of neuter each other in terms of statistics, mm-hmm. right? Like, I think some people who are voting for Josh Oliver are probably getting a little ahead of themselves. Maybe, look, pleasantly surprised me. I'm fine with that, but I think he's more of a 25 to 30 catch guy on the
what
on
you
the
would
high
hope
end.
Is that the entire tight end position is number three.
Collectively.
Something like that.
Yeah, I think that's what it would be, though. It'd be O'Shaughnessy and Swaim and Oliver all contributing right to that mix. Some people voted for Kyle Rudolph in the hopes that he ends up here. Look, if Kyle Rudolph were somehow to
then
come
he
to
would
Jacksonville,
probably be two or three.
He would be in that mix for sure because I don't think they would bring in a guy who, based on the cap space they have, is a pretty high-priced veteran at this point in time without the plan on using him pretty proficiently. I guess kind of by default, I'm going to, again, go with the idea that he hurt himself so early in the process last year that Marquise Lee would be my third guy because I think he's a good safety valve receiver, mm-hmm. runs some of that shorter stuff. I can't, to me, count on Chark to have the kind of volume at this point in time. Connolly is intriguing, but a bit of a mystery. Tough to vote for Keelan Cole over some of these other guys based on the way last year went. So I guess I would go Dede, Fournette, and Lee, which is kind of the chalk three, mm-hmm. probably. Would you have a different third in there?
I would go with Westbrook, Fournette, Chark, with Lee being really important on third downs and playing a role. But my guess is that it'll take Marquise a couple weeks to get going. With the knee coming back. So you would hope by the second half of the season that that's going well. Maybe Chark at three, just perhaps a little wishful thinking in there.
Yeah.
And some projection that, boy, does that need to happen. I would think we'll both have a much better list of three in 2 weeks.
Hope so,
yeah.
Right? And watching a little bit of what goes on out there. I don't know if we can share that list of three in 2 weeks. to be determined.
You could probably make a list.
Maybe make
just
a list. Tony, for you, who are your three?
Dede, Fournette, and probably Marquise Lee. I'm looking, you mentioned the idea of the tight end position combining to be number three on the list, potentially looking at what the Jags did at the tight end position last year. The entirety of the tight ends combined for 49 catches.
Not
for the
much.
Jags last year, which would have been third on
but
the team.
New OC,
yeah.
Quarterback who's had good success
led
targeting
by
the tight end position in recent years.
James O'Shaughnessy with 24 for 214.
Keep it in mind, Zach Ertz doesn't play for this team.
No.
You know what I mean? So, like, if I played in Philly, I'd be targeting
be
Zach
my top
Ertz
three.
A lot too, right?
Right.
You know, what about, like, on the outside looking in, and I understand Yeldon was so high last year in part because he started so many games, but what about a guy like Benny Cunningham or somebody being the third down pass catching specialist, so to speak?
I just think if Fournette's healthy, I think he's going to be in that role.
You think so?
I mean, not in the – I say that and somebody's going to go, well, he's not Darren Sproles. Different play. But if you recall, a big storyline this time last year was getting him up to speed enough on third downs so that he could be on the field in that situation. He's good there. He's been at times more effective in that role than he has been running the ball. I just think he's going to be a big, big part of the third down.
If everyone is healthy, health is not an issue, who gets the second most running back touches and or carries? Because it's a different thing, obviously.
I would guess if everybody's healthy, I'd still probably say Blue because he'd be that every third series guy. If you're not going to run Fournette, the, you know, if you're trying to budget his carries, like was a topic his rookie year, you would think he'd be the backup, but it'll depend.
Based on experience?
Either Armstead or Blue, whoever's the backup.
A lot of people think Armstead's going to.
I think he probably will be too, but right now, but, you know, either Armstead or Blue, whoever wins that job.
Yeah. If Fournette goes out for a month, knock on wood, that it doesn't happen, who you think it's Blue? Right, best bet at the
start.
Look, we're in May. I get it.
At the start, until we see the rookie win the job as the backup, I would say Blue at first with the idea that Armstead would be probably be the guy by the end of the season.
All right. With that, we wrap up the show for today here. And before we get out of here, though, let's welcome in XL Primetime.
Now, the two-minute drill delivered by Moe's Southwest Grill.
Welcome to Moe's!
At Moe's, our caterings have you covered from head to toe and especially stomach. Order your office event or tailgate catering today online at moescateringfl.com.
All right, Joe C. on the other end. What's up, Joe? How are you?
Doing great. Did you have a good weekend?
I had a great weekend. Yankees took over first place.
Okay,
I made an eagle on Saturday, Joe, like the 10th one in my entire life.
That's nice.
I had a really nice weekend, and I spent time with my family as well.
there's that.
They're right. No, but I did. How about yourself?
Yeah, everything was good. I enjoyed what I saw from Brooks Koepka. There's nothing wrong with a little struggle and a little, you know, that four bogey stretch that he was on. Holy smokes! So I was, you know, kind of dialed in at that point thinking that we would finally get some drama attached to this PGA Championship because it was a runaway for the
longest time.
And there
was, though. I mean, it got to one stroke,
yeah.
So there was momentary drama. I think the only time I saw the facade crack a little bit is when he airmailed the green on the par three with the 8-iron.
Yeah.
When the wind died down, and I just looking at his face, I think that was when it started to kind of catch up, but then he righted the ship and one for the fourth time in 8 tries in the majors.
Yeah, there's no getting away from he had enough of a cushion to where he could afford, that lapse. And that's a tough course. And the wind was up, and there was only one dude among those at the top of the leaderboard that was able to break par, and that was DJ. And then he cost himself a couple of key shots, which, gosh, who knows what would have happened. But Koepka said it, and, you know, as I'm watching it, I'm sure a lot of other people did too, when they started chanting DJ at 14 – after the bad tee shot, then the chip, which went through the green, He nodded his head a little bit, like he was basically telling them all kiss his butt, and he ended up
which
saying,
which is fine, but at least he showed that he was aware of what was happening around him.
Yeah,
right.
It was great, and then he said in the press conference that is what refired the engines, and I loved it.
Yeah. So 6-1 to win the U.S. Open. DJ's 8-1. He's had a lot of success at Pebble Beach. Who's the better bet?
Golly, I would go DJ.
I think I would too, yeah. Right? And I kind of want Koepka to keep this role going, but I think just based on track record, I might go that way as well. I'm sure you'll talk a lot about that today, Joey, and a bunch of other stuff as well. Appreciate it, bud.
All right, man. Talk to you later.
You got it. Joe C., Hacker, Matt Hayes, and Big Leon Searcy coming your way with XL Primetime for the next 3 hours or so. Tomorrow, OTAs.
All OTAs all the time,
OTAs, baby. We'll be out there counting, taking attendance is what's going to be going on.
That's right. Even though we can't report it.
No. Can you not report even attendance?
I think you can. I have to relook at the rules again today.
So. Yeah, I'm definitely going to refresh myself on the media guidelines for organized
team activities.
There are
rules now. There are rules.
Absolutely, and you got to follow the rules.
That's right, baby.
If you want continued access, at least we get to see what happens, Tony. We'll just have to keep it to ourselves to some degree. But that's all right. Nick Foles, just throw the ball beautifully. That's all I want. You know, just look like a guy who knows how to.
I want some receivers to look good in and out of the breaks.
That would be fine, too. But particularly, just spin the ball on the proper axis. That's all I'm asking for. It's not a lot. All right, that'll do it for us today. Thanks, to Dan and Jeff sitting down with the Executive Vice President of Football Operations, Tom Coughlin, this morning out at the J Fund. Welcome back to ET. Glad to have you back on board. So for him, for the aforementioned, for John Osier, for Fat Tony, for Joe Fortunato, I am Mike Dempsey. We'll be out practice field side tomorrow with a big star coming by. JP Shadrick's going to join us for part of the program tomorrow, so you know it's going to be a good one. And we finally upgraded from Osier. Oh, my gosh. Can't wait. All right. Jaguars today, tomorrow, 10 to noon, right here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Yo, Jacksonville, let's go.